Accession number 6820, roll number 1.
Mr. McKenzie, reel 1. Where do you come from, Mr. McKenzie?
Well, I was born in Scotland, in the west coast of Russia, in 1908, where my father was a permanent staff instructor on the 3rd Battalion of the regiment which I eventually was to join, the Seaforth Highlanders.
Where did you go to school?
Several places, because being a military family, we moved around. But I commenced school in the infant school in Fort George, which is very near Inverness, and was at that time the depot of the regiment to which my father belonged. I commenced school there, and during World War One, we moved from Fort George to Aviemore, my father's home. I went to school there, little country school, and when the war finished, we had moved to Edinburgh, where I went to school. After my father returned from the services after the war, he was employed as a clerk on the Ministry of Pensions in Cowdenbeath in Fifeshire, where I went to school and eventually finished my education at the Beath Higher Grade School, Cowdenbeath.
How old were you then?
Then I was 14. My mother died just before I reached the age of 14.
Did you go straight into employment when you left school?
When I left school, I moved to Aviemore with my sister and found employment at the Aviemore Station Hotel, which is now the very big holiday centre in Aviemore. At the end of that year, 1923, I joined the army on boy service, the same regiment in which I had been born.
Why did you decide to join the army?
It was inherited. Having been born in the regiment, there wasn't anything else I wanted to do but to join it, the regiment. I joined it in 1923 in November, and a fortnight after I joined, I was posted to Belfast with the first draft from the depot. I was employed mainly because my cousin was the regimental quartermaster at that time. I was employed in a tailor's shop and moved in 1926 from Belfast to Aldershot. Coming off boy service at the back end of 1926 when I was 18.
Can we go on now to the outbreak of war in September 1939, and can you tell me what was the reaction of you yourself and the people round about you to that declaration?
At the time of the declaration of war, I was a resident steward at the club in Penchester Road, Dover. We had already had some experience of panic in 1938 when the Munich arrangement was set up. And I expected that war would break out in 39. So I was quite ready for it. At that time, I was a reservist on the Section D of the Army Reserve, and immediately the call-up came, I was off, leaving the club in Penchester Road in my wife's hand, and rejoined my regiment, or rejoined the depot of my regiment in Fort George. I was one night in Fort George when I joined a draft for the 2nd Battalion, or the 78th, it used to be known, of the Seaforth Highlanders in Maryhill Barracks in Glasgow, where I was quickly promoted to Lance Sergeant. That was in, of course, September 1939. I was actually on the square in Fort George when war was declared. Arriving in the barracks at Maryhill in Glasgow, I soon picked up the old skills of the infantry NCO and was posted to D Company, where I settled down and was sent on when the battalion moved to join the brigade at Aldershot. I was sent in on the advance party and moved down from Glasgow to Aldershot. From there, I had my mobilisation kit and changed into battle dress with the rest of them. I had my embarkation leave and was ready to move to France with the brigade on the 19th of October 1939.
Before we go on to the move to France, can you tell me whether or not people generally seem to be in favour of the declaration of war when Chamberlain made the announcement that we were at war with Germany?
I think, so far as I can remember, there was a general feeling of relief that at last the waiting period was over. The tension was lifted from the lives, and that there were, especially in the regiment that I was in, there was a desire to get on and finish the job.
What did people feel about Hitler at the time?
They had very little time for him because that he'd had his fair chance to come to terms and hadn't accepted that chance. That's my opinion.
Did there seem to be any scenes of mass enthusiasm for the war?
Being one who remembered the commencement of the 1418 war, there was nothing like the same hysteria as there was in 1914. But people were quietly confident that at last they had to do something about this man, Hitler.
What can you remember of the reaction to the outbreak of the First World War?
I was very young, but I remember that there was a tremendous enthusiasm in that area. Of course, it was in the north of Scotland, and the men who were coming up were mostly reservists from the Highland Regiment, the Seaforth Highlanders, and men of the 3rd Original Militia Battalion of the Seaforth Highlanders, which my father was colour sergeant at the time. They came up in flocks. The road between the railhead there, Dardersier, and the Fort George was absolutely black with men for days and days and days, flocking in to join the colours. Tremendous enthusiasm for getting back into the uniform again. That's First World War I'm talking about.
But were the civilians in August 1914 cheering in the streets?
Well, I don't know, because I was living in married quarters at the depot in Fort George, right out in the country. The feeling amongst the military men was one of real patriotism. They wanted to get in and do the job. And, of course, they were soldiers.
Now, coming back to September 1939, what type of war did you expect to have to fight in France before you actually got there?
One always fights the last war in the British Army, so that training was along the lines of the last battles of the 1418 war. Even in whilst we were in France, gas was the real problem. Would we have to use gas? I think and understand that we were equipped to use it if necessary, but we all hoped that we wouldn't have to, that it would be the kind of war that would be fought without gas. But, of course, that was our biggest problem. We knew very, very little about aerial bombardment. As soldiers, we hadn't suffered it.
How much did you know, before you came into contact with them, about the German army?
Comparatively little, really. So far as I was concerned, there wasn't much revealed to us. We respected the Jerry as a fighting soldier, thinking along the lines of the First World War, and what we knew of him there, that he was a good soldier. And there would be nothing very easy for us. But we had to get used to the modern weapons, which we knew were still around, or would be around.
Can we go on now to your move to France, and can you tell me how it was accomplished and whether it went smoothly or not?
The move to France was in October 1939. We moved as a brigade, the 17th Infantry Brigade. We moved from Aldershot to Southampton, were shipped over, each regiment on its own transport, on its own ship, and we moved to Cherbourg under the escort of destroyers. It was accomplished without any complications whatsoever, very smoothly, under the wing of the Royal Navy.
How did the French population greet you? Did they ignore you, or did they take any notice?
They treated us in Cherbourg in a very friendly manner, but there was no hysterical cheering. It was just part of the day's work, as far as they were concerned, to see troops moving in and out of their port. We moved from Cherbourg to a place on the Sarthe district called Saint-Rémy-de-Plan. And there was the first hitch, if I can call it a hitch, in relationship. The French appeared quite offhand with us there, not very interested, not hostile in any way, but not very interested until we got our first francs, our first pay in francs, when they received, of course, the most of them in their various cafes in the very small village of Saint-Rémy.
Whereabouts is Saint-Rémy?
Saint-Rémy is in the Sarthe. S-A-R-T-H-E. Sarthe. District of France. It's not very far from Le Mans. And 14 kilometres from La Hutte, which is a very small railway station in between.
Where did you move to after this?
We stayed 1 week at Saint-Rémy. Took the train, once again from La Hutte, and toured. I'm not quite sure which direction we went, but we finished up in the early hours of the morning at a town called Seclin, S-E-C-L-I-N, in northern France.
Was this your permanent billet?
It was our next move, or the first move we made in France after getting there. We were there for a very short space of time. We had several moves and eventually landed up quite close to Seclin on the Atiche Ridge, digging anti-tank traps, which was an almost impossible task because of the nature of the ground, and it was chalky and muddy. Flanders mud. We were employed there until, I think, the 4th of December, when we moved to a town smack on the Belgium frontier called Hallowen. This is the same town as Menin in Belgium. And, of course, the end of the old famous Menin Road between Ypres and Menin.
What type of duties did you have there?
From there, the day that the regiment landed there, I had to take over the duties of mess caterer for the officers' mess, and that was coupled with the duties of in the sergeant in charge of the intelligence section, looking after DRs.
What are they?
Dispatch riders. We had, I think, about 16 motorbikes. However, I did not have a great deal to do with this because the PMC at the officers' mess, Lieutenant Richard Broad, looked after the intelligence section and let me look after the officers' mess.
What were the intelligence duties supposed to be? What did they involve?
They involved mainly, so far as the section sergeant was concerned, the handling of convoy work. The dispatch riders, of course, had to be used taking messages from one section to another. But as I said, I had very little to do with that because my immediate superior looked after that side of it while I looked after the officers' mess.
How long was your unit at Hallowen?
Hallowen until... this was from the 4th of December... 39 until March 1940, during which time I had a part of that in as sergeant caterer of the officers' mess, and moved from there. Incidentally, the mess. The president of the mess committee Lieutenant Broad moved at the same time as I did to C Company of the regiment, where he took over 13 platoon, and I became sergeant, platoon sergeant of 14. This was in C Company. I was employed then for some time in the normal training, the training program, and then was seconded to a company of anti-tank trench diggers with 20 men from my company, a job which I completed, went on leave and returned to find that the regiment had moved from Halloween to Bayeul.
Where's Bayeul?
Bayeul was on the extreme left of the British line, which was beginning to be called the Gort Line.
Can you describe what the ditches were like, these anti-tank traps?
They simply were dug out by a mechanical shovel. They were around about 14 feet deep, 14, 16 feet deep. They were riveted with a three-piece panel of corrugated iron battened onto three poles, which were placed against the upright edge of the trench as it was dug, tapped in by the shovel, and the end of the props pulled back on by wire, which was previously been twisted, put into place, and this firmed up the whole arrangement. It left a trench which had a shallow slope into it with a straight up side, which presumably would be extremely difficult for a tank to get out of once it had got its nose in. I was never to see any tanks in these traps.
How wide were they?
The width from the, we'll say where the tank would enter, I should say would probably be 18, 20 feet wide at the top and coming down to a muddy mass at the bottom of, we'll say, 12, 14 feet.
And did you say you had machinery to do this?
We had a what they call a back-acting shovel. It was one of the RE's excavating units that we worked with. We had one RE sergeant, but the work that had to be done came under my own supervision once I had learned the job.
Was there much digging?
We had quite a bit. We had to dig right round, very close to the frontier, right round a farmhouse and a blockhouse that was being built, a pillbox there. Then I had a very straight run of about half a kilometre to do before I finished that particular phase.
Was there any wire or other obstacles put up?
Not at that time.
How confident did the soldiers feel in the fortifications which they were erecting?
Well, it was difficult to understand, but one presumed this would have been a stop because we were a long, long way from the Maginot Line at that particular point. It's very close to Lille in northern France. There is a sort of semicircle there of Roubaix, Tourcoing, Lille and Halouane, with, on the Belgium side, Menin. Now, so far as I was aware, or made aware, the plan was to be that should hostilities break out, that the Germans were expected to invade Belgium, Luxembourg, and Holland, that we would move forward from there onto the river near Antwerp to line up where I should think from Antwerp along the forts, and as close to the Belgian frontier facing Germany as we could get with arrangements with the Belgians. That was so far as we as soldiers were allowed to know. Everybody seemed to know what was going to happen except the regiments.
Now, I think that you had a period in the Maginot Line. When did you go there?
The arrangement to go to the Maginot Line was to enable British troops to get some experience of the warfare that was actually going on at that time. The regiment moved to Bayeul from Halouin, and from Bayeul to a place called Mézières-le-Metz, which is quite close to Metz, or Metz as they call it. And as part of the 152 Brigade, by this time we were into the 51st Division, taking the place of the 6th Battalion Territorials of the regiment, in 152 Brigade. We moved then from Mézières up and took over a section of what was called the Tiergarten in the front, about 13 kilometres in front of the Maginot proper, the forts. The line there consisted of built-up posts, built-up